Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So much going on in the guiding Earth story, I thought it is perfect to be welcoming my longtime colleague, Daniel Gemario. We say wonder magnetizes the genie of participatory kinship, now appearing everywhere. The summer solstice cahoot that I did with Deborah Felmuth, the mother of all mother summer solstice solace, at the very moment of the solstice presented on June 20th, it's now available at coyotenetworknews.com. And as we were animating then, and let us continue again in the spirit of Neptune and the power of metaphor and mist, we were conjuring a lavender cannabis psilocybe infused mist to waft over any places of hot conflagration like Tulsa, so that any up to no good of explosiveness, volatility would be a soggy, wet firecracker fart. So that seemed to work pretty good, but we have more in the spirit of cooperating. We want to waft lavender and then add your own ingredients. I like cannabis and psilocybe mist on all potential conflagrations, with also the Neptune dream vision water, the power of reversal that anything up to no good, boomerang, boo, with a meringue pie in the face. So just something on our work table. July 3rd, experts raise concerns over Mount Rushmore fireworks planned by Trump in the Black Elk Wilderness part of Black Hills, right? So it's like a Juneteenth and the solstice and Tulsa and this iconographic hunger. But anyway, so we will discuss all these things. So we welcome the return of fellow astro-mytho-political astrologer Daniel Gemario, fellow Sun Neptune Libra, both of us with Mercury at 5 Scorpio, that we all may magnetize Venus, animate Mars, and spiral forth the guiding metastory for now. Daniel is joining us from 5 a.m. in the Philippines. Oh, bless your heart. proffering the choreography of Venus and Mars woven into the backdrop of Juneteenth, Tulsa, solstice, solar eclipse, Neptune, Venus stationing, setting a resonant hum for the next 6 months to winter solstice when Jupiter and Saturn conjoin, which in turn sets a tone for the next 20 years. Time to tone the templates. His website is shamanicastrology.com. Welcome, Daniel, you up early person.
Well, hello there again. It's been a while since we've talked. I get up this about this time every day anyway, because most of my clientele are in the U.S. So, I generally work about 6 a.m. till about 1 p.m. Each day. So I've adjusted myself to like going to bed at 8:30, getting up at 5. So it's less of a challenge here, you know. Very different from a lot of my city night owl friends that live in the U.S. So, yeah, this is like the 13th week now of being locked down in our house that's near Metro Manila, which the way it's so draconian here, quite frankly, that we can't even leave to go to the other province where we have a house up in the mountains. And any travel, any international travel or even travel from one province to the other is simply not allowed. So it's really been quite draconian over here. In fact, I don't know if there's any coverage of what is taking place over here, since the beginning of this global situation. I don't know. Has there been?
No. Tell us, file scouting reports. How is it there that we're all in this one large dream? But there is a pulse, I mean, with many parts of our collective intelligence retrograde for a deep pausing introspection, but finding autonomy within that. So can you go out for walks and things? Yes, yeah.
Well, according to the quote rules here, anyone over 59 or less than 21 cannot. We live in the top of a hill where I do sneak out at 5 a.m. every now and then to take a walk, but it's supposedly against the rules. I mean, cannot do it, and we can't go out to a different province. We wanted to go out to a place to look for land somewhere else, but can't. Very, very strong medical and military and martial law here, quite frankly. And it's fascinating to see this whole global situation from the perspective of being over here in Asia. because both the WHO, China, and the U.S. have each given equal amounts of money to continue the lockdown here. And so far, three separate countries, China, India, and the U.S. have offered to dump the first experimental vaccines on the Philippines first, as they always do that to this poor country over here. In fact, Anthony Fauci's anti-dengue experimental vaccine, the same kind that is being pushed for COVID-19, was dumped here about a year and a half ago. 600 died before it was withdrawn. That's unfortunate. You know about Maria Ressa, right?
Tell us.
She's the activist head of the one of the more independent news agencies over here. She's been on Democracy Now! A few times, and explained how Cambridge Analytics practiced their technique on the Filipinos first, and that is how Duterte got elected. By hiring thousands of trolls and to put all the news just on Facebook. 95% of Filipinos are on Facebook, and so Zuckerberg, in his infinite wisdom, dumped it free on the Filipinos. You have to pay for the internet, and it was pretty easy to manipulate the opinion to elect Duterte. And the same techniques were then used by the same company to get Trump elected. So they practiced here first. And Maria Ressa was on trial for libel. The government here had locked her up, basically. And then she was just, even though Amal Clooney was her one of her attorneys, they still convicted her. And she'll be, I think they sentenced her for 12 years in prison.
Ooh.
And there's more journalists killed over here per capita than anywhere in the world. I mean, these stories are not known in many places.
No, but we track the all stories. Anything anywhere is everywhere. So the second century medical writers said, pandemics occur when tyrants are in power. So it's all one thing. And I don't know if you ever watched the 2011 movie Contagion. It's pretty good. But the last 3 minutes are kind of the summation of how did this start? And it's just rainforest coming down, bulldozed by humans, bats moving into factory, bat 101 pig taken into restaurant.
I didn't see it, but I've certainly read a lot about it. And the advisors to the movie are some of the same people that are involved with the WHO. And the Gates Foundation, et cetera. So, I mean,
as we know, we are tuning our discernment. We'll honor your special proffering of the Venus and Mars cycles. But Venus stationed right squaring Neptune, so it's like, all right. So the world is suffused with 800 million crackpot conspiracy true as well skeins and stories all brewing. There is no one them, right? And it's all incredibly nuanced. And then the instructions are really for each one of us to kind of calibrate in which way do we want to be messengers, receiving and sending from group mind, right, to kind of calm down the static. So, there's a lot. And then we... Yeah, and nuance and standards and discernment and creative suspicion in a calm way are all kind of crucial. But what a powerful time. So Venus is stationing, today, your yesterday. Do you want to, I mean, I have my own, take, mostly guided by you, but I love this setting of the whole Venus cycle. So have you seen her rise yet? Has she returned?
Oh, yeah. Five a.m. over here. I'll go out and this time of year, one of the few times where during the day, because we're in rainy season now, where the sky is clear, is first thing in the morning. So I've been watching her for the last week, actually. I even was able to see her with the tiny crescent moon during the old moon. Before the new moon, where it was a very rare example of something that happens in the Venus cycle, where there will be a moon Venus conjunction prior to Venus going before she goes direct. And that's really, really rare. It makes for a very special expression of the whole cycle of Venus. The thing I find even more interesting regarding Venus going direct around now, which actually is a formal kind of full speed ahead in the current Venus cycle, is that it's also almost exactly at the point where Mars is entering Aries. And in fact, I've been placing a whole lot more attention on the Mars cycle coming up recently, because he doesn't get as much attention as the Venus cycle these days.
Oh, he will on Saturday when he enters his own sign, possibly. But to stay with Venus and then to Mars and through the year and into January and other things. But you know, as you have guided me, and I learned that you know this cycle of her as evening star close to the sun disappears into the underworld, usually for sort of 40 days quarantine. But this time, right, she just ducked into invisibility going, can't leave those humans unsupervised, and came back pretty quickly, right?
Well, actually, not exactly. In the 584-day Venus cycle, each Venus cycle will be 584 days from morning star phase to even through the end of the evening star phase.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually two different underworld phases. Two times where she disappears. One is the longer time, which is in between a morning star and an evening star.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the in-between from evening to morning.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's the short one. And the short one we've just had from evening to morning, that is when there is a complete shapeshift or a complete alchemical shift from one primary archetype of the feminine to another. And when I say the feminine, I don't mean women, but I'm talking about the archetypal feminine in both men and women. Mm-hmm. So this change that will happen 584 days, and it happens with her heliacal rise, when Venus is seen rising in the morning sky. The sign that she rises in then establishes the primary overtone or the primary archetypal energy of the archetypal feminine for the next 584 days. And this time, of course, it's Gemini. So we're looking at the Gemini aspect of the sacred feminine or the archetypal feminine for the next 584 days. And that has a pattern that repeats every 8 years. And so we go back 8 years. This is the very, you might remember this, this is exactly the same Venus cycle as during the Venus transit. And when I actually had a whole group gathered at Green Lake on the Big Island of Hawaii to watch Venus go across the face of the sun. So it's the same cycle, but now it's moved on a bit, you know, with the way the orbits are inclined. So this time Venus did not actually pass in front of the face of the sun during the point of the conjunction, the Venus-Sun conjunction. But in 2012, yeah, but you know, this kind of some tragedy or sadness with that, because that very place, sacred spot, Green Lake on the Big Island, no longer exists. You know, so we were up there in 2012, but because of the volcanic thing that was happening there a couple of years ago, it all got inundated by lava. So it Pele has taken her back. But anyway, yes.
So she is bringing back from the underworld, and in your latitude, she's back. Gemini, voice, language, yes. Of participatory kinship. Can we go there?
Trickster. I mean, of all the different at least in our paradigm, right? You know, in the material we've been developing in our school for, oh my gosh, for me now it's about 30 years. The Gemini expression of the feminine is, in fact, the shapeshifter, the trickster, the heyoka, but also at a kind of a higher octave expression is the psychopomp, the guide for souls. Clearly storyteller, clearly a mistress of magic, you know, the version of the feminine that dazzles, not just to be frivolous, but to actually blow minds in a good way, to, you know, bring magic and mystery and myth to everyone. And she's freed to be in every dimension. You know, it's like any good psychopomp. Somebody can She can take somebody to the underworld, bring them back. She can take somebody to the celestial and bring them back. But she's not possessed by any particular zone. You know, I mean, she's free to go on any pathway. So
she brings back that to all of us who are, raise your hand if you want to be gender and species fluid. All right, there we go. There, just crossing all those things. And it's also kind of like Iris, the rainbow goddess, from whom we get iridescent, right? So she can travel take messages from the underworld to heaven and heaven to underworld, because she doesn't live either place, right?
Yeah, and before the Zeus takeover in the theocracy of Greece, Iris was equivalent to Hermes as that messenger, one that would. And there was actually, I always forget her name, but there was a Jungian female writer who actually her whole life's work was on the creation of the understanding of Iris as a triple goddess, as representing within herself all aspects of the feminine principle. But any triple goddess always still has a leading edge, and the leading edge of Iris is the hermetic one, the Heoka, the one who can be beyond the law, but is not a criminal. You steal cattle from the king, not because you want to own the cattle, but in order to kind of bust them of his pomposity, arrogance, and status.
Yes, and so just to honor her now, her main connections are she trines Saturn, so we might say it's a time of, for each person, each of us, of customized dedication and calibration, going, what do we want to be messengers, and how shall we be messengers for what we love, and to be reminded of the language and word craft as one of the great technologies of cooperation. The more words, the more metaphors, the more avenues of cooperating with the whole big thing. So there's the trine to Saturn, loose, you know, but it'll come back, and then the square to the moon. And look, the moon's right on your Saturn right now, 2+ Virgo, which is an angel watching over a couple in the wilderness. Thank you.
My progressed moon is also 2 Virgo right now.
Oh, really? Right. Well, and my natal moon's 4 Virgo, and your Venus is 4 Virgo. But enough of that. So I like the square of, you know, Venus Gemini to Moon Virgo, the two Hermes Mercurial realms, right? One is the conversational, and even better words than flirtatious, available Gemini Venus. And then the Moon Virgo is the Hermes or Hermia deep, you know, language craft. So perhaps for those who would like, it's the capacity to speak conversationally about really profound things.
Yeah.
Is that in accord with your...
Yes.
Sense of what she's offering?
You mean, are you talking about the way the aspect operates today, or
today.
Overall sense of
I'm just going for today, and then you can take it anywhere you want. When I look at
the Virgo moon in combination with this, is that to me the medicine, the primary medicine of the Virgo moon, whether it's natally or in a daily transit, is the creation of sacred space. As Hillman always liked to put it, is that the presiding deity, as it were, over therapy is Hestia or Vesta, which is often associated with Virgo. So you create a sacred space to go in. You create a sacred enclosure in order to do the internal investigation. And then Gemini then externally will speak of it. So it's, both of them, I think, are in service to spirit and creators of that sense of the sacred, as opposed to being, you know, purely secular. And I also look at the Virgo moon as the place of the archetypal feminine that is that Hestian Vesta autonomy, sovereignty, as the way in which people like Esther Harding originally wrote about it. It doesn't mean virgin in the more modern sense, but it means a woman who is one unto herself. The establishment of that self-sovereignty that I think is so important for us to remember these days.
Yes, and I want to do a shout out to my great colleague Sylvia Hanley in Vallejo, who is so dedicated to many interesting things, but Vesta especially, or Hestia. And she says wherever Vesta is, and Vesta is very dancing with the moon and squaring Chiron, she says is where we are divested of orthodoxy, denied, delayed the usual expression of that realm, while our dedication to keeping the community hearth flame alive is deepened, right? So it really hums into all of our hearts going, are we willing to make this dedication? There is a beautiful resonance of Vesta 9 Cancer sextile Uranus, nature's evolutionary genius trickster at 9 Taurus, a Red Cross nurse, the willingness to go into difficult situations with our little hearth flame. Squaring Chiron at 9 Aries, a scholar gives new expression to old symbols. There we go. Okay, so there's but I like the divested and delayed while our dedication is deepened quality of Hestia or Vesta, you know, chiming in now. That all of us, you know, kind of light this hearth flame for the safety and well-being of all creatures. And just for the fun of it, we'll come back and go anywhere you want, but we go, well, Mercury, you know, Gemini and Virgo are incarnational agents of Mercury, and so we go, where's Mercury? And we go, it's overhead in California at 12 Cancer on the U.S. Sun, so we're gazing, and it's retrograde, we're gazing at the past before us. A fun thing that Deborah Falmouth introduced into our solstice kahoot, she said, in the West, we think of the future before us and the past, the future before us and the past invisible behind us. And she said, in Arab culture, it's the reverse. We like these reversals. The past is in front of us where we gaze, and the future is invisible behind us, but it is crafted by our gazing at the caravan of mentors. I go, oh, I like that.
It's interesting. That's one of my favorite ways of understanding the Renaissance, where I use the Renaissance in much of the same way.
How so?
Yeah. Oh, well, the honoring of the brilliance of the past in order to, as our mentors, and to inform the spaciousness that is created now to go into a future that is not yet.
Right.
This is like taking those seeds from the past, and then that helps with the rebirth that is taking place.
Yes, you know, and it's like the beginning of one of the frames of beginning Arabic fairy tales says, it was and it was not, right? Mm-hmm. So we're in a very fluid, shape-shifty time, right? I mean, that's why everything we do really matters, literally matters enormously. Because even in the delightful, there we were late last night, and you were like, you're probably asleep now, but I have no internet. And I go, well, we're very fluid. We'll see if it works. Oh, it does. Okay. Yeah, but fluid, right? Very, very fluid, this shape-shifty time.
Well, every day is completely fluid over here. We don't know what they're going to do next over here, I'll tell you that. Fortunately, we were well supplied because, as you probably know, back in 2017, at the end of the year, I did a whole presentation that described aspects that are happening now. While I didn't specifically say a quote pandemic would be the beginning of it, but I'd spent a long time in that presentation talking about how 2020 would be the tipping point. It would be the would be a global configuration, and would actually be symbols and events that it would be the most dramatic and important global event for 12,800 years. And that was at the end of 2017, and we just had a solstice right at the same time you're doing your solstice event. I don't know if you got to do a live event. We had about a 3-hour class with our school regarding it. I know you like the Sabian symbols really a lot, and we put a lot of attention on the one for the eclipse. We actually had a 68% totality visibility here in outside our house. We actually saw the first part of it, I love the Sabian for that for one Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm bringing this up is, of course, this particular Mercury synodic cycle is emphasizing the archetype of Cancer. You know, so that it, when Mercury will rise after the Mercury retrograde time period. It rises in the sign of Cancer, and that's like essentially establishing that next overtone or the next main archetype for Cancer.
But tell our attentive listening audience what the Sabian symbol was for the solar eclipse.
You did. I sure would have thought you would have been working with it.
I do. I just want to. I can say it, but I just thought you would deliver it.
Sorry. It's so funny because I didn't. I almost overslept this morning. Okay, and I was intending to have my handouts that included the language, beautiful language.
Okay, I've got it. I just thought that's right. I see you were gliding by it because but it is great. It is a sailor lowering one flag and raising another, changes of direction, shifts in allegiance, creating a new sense of emotional identity, bringing previously hidden needs to the fore. Yes, but the lowering of flags, that's good. And the renaming of statues and the toppling. With Lafayette Park, I'm going, take the guy off, all right? Keep the horse. The horse is a good statue. So lowering flags, lowering statues, renaming things, those are the kind of surface but still profound, quality of dissolve the police. It's part of the Mars Neptune conjunction, which we don't need to know astrology to practice it. It's been so responsive, going, whoa, dissolving the any of the unimaginative imprisoning of Mars into compensatory cruel warrior swagger, into guardian protector, right. A whole reframing of what we want. It's quite huge, and global, and so
I was inspired by the Cancerian part of it when we were thinking about Mercury, because one of the things we've been discussing in the revisioning of the different mystery schools, which is our expression for the signs, so Cancer being a mystery school, it is a revisioning of what kin is, what kinship is, the ability to go beyond the provincialism of the shadow of Cancer, which would be like, USA number one, we're number one, or whether it's your race or whether it's your gender, whether it's your country or whatever your small group is. Rather, it's replanetarization into a global family, and that's being able to see beyond blood per se, but going toward what real kinship is. So much beautiful material from indigenous writers regarding that, about the establishment of our connection with our true kin, and now we must find who are our true kin. And I think that's part of the revision of Cancer and Mercury and Cancer. I think we can tell those stories now.
Right, and also remembering, all the ways we remember in our mythic DNA, knowing the Venus Gemini thing, that we live in a conversational world, that everything's speaking to us all the time by its shape, its color, its song and rhythm. And if we humans just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we would be back in the dance. That would be a really good idea. Revisioning kin is great in the most expansive way. Everybody, welcome. And I do love late ancestor astrologer ally Jake Jacobs, really useful astrological joke. Cancer's just a Scorpio in a house coat. It's so good because it is, all signs have their PR, right? Going, oh, there we go. I'm very sensitive. Okay. Just as fierce as Scorpio. But it's in the form of Big Mama going, I'm Zambon. So yeah. I do
it
love
can
that.
Be, certainly on the shadow side can be every bit as controlling. That is for sure.
That is true.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, all signs, Cancer can be the most generous and the most selfish. Libra can be the most polite and the most rude. It is all related. We sign up for the whole adventure of the thing and then the not thing. So there is that that dynamic. But so we're going to take a very short musical break in a moment here. But our guest today is Daniel Jamario, a living treasure of Venus, Mars cycles, and more. We will be exploring these things and go back to the Venus cycle, the Mars cycle, and just take us all the way through. And the images of, you know, iconography and, you know, and us animating the desirable symbolism, lest we leave it by default to the Dementors. I'm looking at the July 3rd Mount Rushmore fireworks in the Black Elk Wilderness. Anyway, so again, our guest is Daniel Jamario. His website is shamanicastrology.com, and we will be right back after this very short break. Here we go.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Thank you always, Taj Mahal, and allies. Thank you always. This is Caroline Casey, Visionary Activist Show, and our perfect for now guide guest co-cahooter is Daniel Jamario, joining us very early in the morning in the Philippines. There we go. And let us both play further with the Venus cycles and the Mars cycles and all of that. But back to the Philippines for a moment. I mean, America and Brazil, right, are just out of control in terms of pandemic. Like, there's no planning, there's no whatever, that's completely crazy. And so you say the draconian shutdown in the Philippines, going, can't even go for a walk, for God's sake. Do you right. think the pandemic will flatten out sooner in the Philippines? Is that a thought?
Well, this may be different than what I may have a different opinion than how you are perceiving this. The Philippines is a really great example of where, in my opinion, an absolute, total, complete overreaction.
Yeah.
The amount of cases goes up the more testing they do, and the test, of course, is it's pretty bogus. You can get a positive anytime you want. The numbers are going to go up the more testing you do.
Well, and a Trump line.
Pardon me?
I mean, that's a Trump line, but
that's not from that's unfortunately one of the things that I've discovered is so easy that the individuals that have really presented tremendous evidence regarding what the test is and what the virus is and so on, they're always marginalized as being pro-Trump. There's so many of them that are not. Robert Kennedy Jr., for example. I could just name numerous people. I've tried very, very hard to look beyond the two-party paradigm. In fact, a great deal of my attention has been on the chart of China, on the People's Republic of China, and what the cycles are happening there. Moon at 1 Aquarius, and the Moon at 3 Aquarius. The death rate, as it were, even if it truly is some COVID-19 or just not some flu, is actually less than the 0.27 death rate around the world. So I just do not really think there's any legitimate reason to shut down the whole culture. A lot of Americans can handle it better than people here. There's so many hundreds of thousands, millions of people with no food over here that, you know, the more people die of starvation here than any numbers of people dying of some flu. You know, I mean, I think it's actually quite ridiculous. And so the more testing you do, the more the numbers are going to go up.
Well, because the only pause there, because that is what Trump says, the more testing, the more cases. And it's like, no, the testing does not create cases. It in some ways, it finds out information. But anyway, but your point is well taken. All right, these are complex matters that we want to put discernment there. That was my only.
That's all my whole point also. In fact, what I do in with this work is whenever I share anything about this with people, first of all, I'm wanting to not inject any fear into any conversation, right? But number two, discernment. But then our approach with this type of astrology in our school is to look at anything that may be happening in the sort of shamanism 101 three-world approach. You know, so there's three worlds happening simultaneously. We have to keep our attention on all three and then somehow stay in that balance, that place of more than discernment. It's like some degree of calmness and positive detachment, I guess, non-attachment in the midst of it. You know, so there's the celestial worldview, what's happening, and there's any number of people. I'm sure you run into them that are just pie in the sky about the whole thing, that it's the new earth is emerging in front of us, and from the perspective of the celestial, that's true. The universe is unfolding as it should, all is well. Leave it up to that universal force. Fine. Then there's the middle world, looking honestly and truthfully at what's happening in each country, in each place, at each city. It's different in L.A. and New York than it is in Texas and so on. Different in the Philippines, different in Laos, different in Vietnam, almost nothing in Vietnam.
And New Zealand. Yeah, Vietnam and New Zealand are it's like, well done, team. Okay, yeah.
And then also the underworld, the lower world perspective. And it actually is, on one level, if you only look at it from the perspective of the underworld, this is a global dark night of the soul. How are people, it's not going to ever go back to how it was before. Some of my really dear friends who are not looking at it from a two-party paradigm at all, or basically their biggest fear is that, in fact, we do go back to normal, that it doesn't actually involve really changing our basic assumptions about how a culture works, about the environment works, about how politics works, and so on, you know, that we can have a full reset into something different. So I'm very hopeful, very idealistic, but I'm also discerning and also not wanting to be in denial about anything.
Absolutely. May it be so for all of us, and we set our standards in place. But absolutely, that this cauldron, this death-rebirth cauldron, that conversation just back in 1981 with Jim Lewis going, oh my God, Age of Capricorn, cauldron of death and rebirth. Right, so everything into the cauldron.
Also, I can point out, I've been spending a lot of time also looking at the, you know, Saturn's ingress into Aquarius, and particularly in light of the chart of China. It was the ingress in 1932 that corresponded with Brave New World, and why? How do you suppose that Aldous Huxley knew about that? It was because his brother Julian was one of the founders of technocracy, together with the grandfather of Elon Musk. You know, so basically that was coming in at a previous Saturn in Aquarius time period. I was hugely influenced in the late 60s, early 70s. By the different approaches to what the so-called Age of Aquarius was going to be, and the inquiry was, will it be utopia or dystopia? And the utopia would be kind of an expansion of, for lack of a better way of putting it, humanistic matristic culture, you know, which was like the sort of late 60s indigenous, be yourself, be your archetype, back to the land, everybody is free, you know, kind of thing. And or would it be a technocratic dictatorship? And I've been looking at those two themes for a long time, particularly with the Saturn in Aquarius.
And we've talked about the fantastic novel We by Eugene Zamyatin, right?
I don't think so.
Well, this is. I'm glad you've turned me on to so many important works. This is a really gracious one, written in the 1910s in Russia, banned for a very, very long time. It was where Aldous Huxley and got most of his ideas, really. And it's just a kind of genius thing in which it in the 1910s in Russia, there's a domed technocratic city. And then outside is wildness, you know.
Yes.
And there's a great woman, KF-43 or whatever, who smokes and is dangerous and is an emissary from the wild place. And see, anyway, it's a genius novel. Mm. So back to we, and it's all about everything is double. Here's the Gemini thing. We can use we in liberating fashion or in imprisoning fashion, right?
And yes.
When we talk about everything and China and we, but we is the, yeah. Anyway, it's a brilliant novel, We by Eugene Zamyatin. Those Russians really knew how to break free of tyranny when they created. Yes, yeah. Back to you.
No, who's the author? Excuse me.
His name is Eugene Zamyatin, Zamiatin, I think. It's again, just the Russians. We look at everything. We're looking back for everything that could help us. Also, Jiga Vertov, early Russian film director, made one of the most radical and liberating movies that's quite pertinent to now ever, called Man with a Movie Camera, in which you're seduced and dazzled into this brilliant photography. It's Moscow, 1914, and you go, whoa. And then every now and then the camera pulls back and films the cameraman filming. So you're entranced, and then you see the mechanism of seduction, and then you're back into it. It's really brilliant. So it's kind of now, I want to draw upon... Yeah. We're drawing upon everything, all liberating analysis, come on into our play. And then, so guide us into the Mars dynamic.
This is fascinating because we haven't really talked about the Mars cycle as much as on our previous times to talk about Venus.
Right.
Mars is harder to understand because it's a longer synodic cycle. So it takes about 26 months for Mars to go through all of its phases in any one cycle. Like right now, for example, if you see Mars, it's kind of rising. It's now rising in the early evening, and it will dominate the sky, getting brighter and brighter and brighter as it's moving toward the time in its orbit when it's closest to Earth and closest to the Sun. And when Mars will enter into Aries in a few days, it will be in Aries for 6 or 7 months. In our understanding of the cycle, whenever Mars reaches this portion of his cycle, right, and then it's the time period where he's spending about 6, 7, sometimes as much as 8 months in one sign, because it's including the retrograde loop, that is establishing the overtone or the central archetypal energy of a time for the archetypal masculine principle, all right, for men and women, Aries. So it's moving into Aries. And even though Mars doesn't actually go direct officially begin the cycle during the point of opposition, and that is not until October 13th.
Friday the 13th.
Right. Yes. But the point I'm trying to bring up is the fact that it's the focus for the masculine principle of both men and women will be with Aries. And I know you, in your way of doing astrology, the things you put your emphasis on are very often the squares. I mean, I certainly use the squares too. But I'm sure you've seen, if you've looked ahead, that during these next, up until the end of the year, there's the Pluto square, there's the Saturn square, there's the Jupiter square, all to the Mars. Mars is squaring all of them. And then there's the conjunction with Chiron and Eris, the connection with Eris. It's just stunning.
All hail Eris. Yes, right. And the Discordians and more from Robert Anton Wilson and the fantastic Illuminatus trilogy of the 60s, 70s.
It blows my mind you're bringing that up, because I just got that out, and I have a copy of that where all three of them are put in one volume, right? And I showed it to my wife and said, look, it's all here. This is about Eris. This is about the different forms of anarchy, everything you could ever know is in that trilogy. So pretty stunning. We talk about synchronicity.
Let me just to and fro a little bit. So Mars enters Aries, and on his way to conjoin Chiron, wisdom of the past. Chiron lives in a cave, most knowledgeable of all beings, the membrane fluidity of harmonious relationship between wild nature and human culture. There we go. Okay. The founder of the Asclepion, the cultural sites of intentional dreaming, healing, and theater. Right. So he's going to go back for that thing. So Mars enters Aries, forward motion, Chiron, retrogrades on September 9th at 28 plus Aries, dancing with KPFA. as Jupiter goes forward, and then goes direct, as you said, on Friday the 13th of November, after the maybe election, after the reports are sort of coming in by mail or horse, or we don't know. But I always like the saying that in Mars retrograde, the aggressor always loses. And I go, maybe that's always true, you know, the aggressor always loses. But part of me goes, the wonderful phrase, and if it's not true, let's make it true. But I like the Mars retrograde, the aggressor always loses. Have you heard that? Is that something you vote for?
I had not heard that before, but I certainly believe that is true. But I could add the word eventually.
Yes. Well done. That's true, because the Iraq war started on a Mars retrograde. The first one, George Bush Sr., you know, right before an eclipse. God, I mean, the Dementors do, they're magnetized to hoover up the sacred things. The second Iraq war begins on the vernal equinox, on Persian New Year, sacred to life. Trump wanted to hoover up Juneteenth, but he couldn't, you know. And
well, there is definitely, we have to speak honestly about it. I mean, these aspects with Mars in Aries, and whether we look at the historical record on it, or we just look at what the potentiality with the Pluto squares and the Saturn squares and the Eris situation, the pandemic and all the emphasis on that has prevented a lot of people from looking at what is actually continuing to happen around the world. The kinds of things happening on the China-India border, right where the eclipse went over, actually. What is happening in the Taiwan Straits? The situation just off the coast here in the South China Sea, where Philippines just re-upped their visiting forces agreement with the U.S. Mm. More troops are coming in here now. And there's that. There's also the destruction that continues to happen in Syria. While we've been thinking about the virus, wheat fields in massive amounts of food burned in Syria by our people, you know, and the Yemen thing continues, you know, through our good buddies, the Saudis. This is all continues to happen. And I have these conversations, by the way, with, strangely enough, I have otherwise intelligent friends of mine that are trumpeteers. I cannot believe it. Who think he's like the great white father who's here to save us, right?
And I
composed a whole group of 17 questions to ask these people, and one of them is his continual surrounding himself with neocons. And you know what their response is? Oh, we're following Sun Tzu, says keep your enemies close. Well, it turns out Sun Tzu never said that. That was out of the mouth of the Godfather. Those were words that were written by Mario Puzo. We probably know this. I mean, so the whole, I sometimes get quite agitated by having to deal with such ridiculousness.
Well, I think that's why, you know, so yes, there is, as we know from this beautiful language, there is a description, you know, and our word disaster says when we pit our small wills against the larger pulse, there's a disaster. And then there's a guiding instruction. So conflagration, the issues of tyranny and conflagration, and we know that, you know, the Trump Bannon playbook is very limited. He wants riots and conflict and death, and he feeds on cruelty. So I think it behooves all of us to go, even the Trumpian people going, wouldn't you like to just put, you know, again, lavender mist so that nothing untoward, or no, maybe the Trump people, they are under a mysterious spell. It's the spell of, well, it's a cult, right? Yeah. Everybody wants a story. They want a story, and this is compensatory to go, you know, oh, we're part, yeah. But it is amazing. I mean, you can go to you know, people on Facebook or websites, and they're all about balancing auras and whatnot, and they're Trump people. You know, balance auras, and, well, remember, in 1930s Germany, there was a lot of astrology and yoga and metaphysics, right? But completely, yes, completely oblivious to the context of what there's, like, oh, isn't everything great? Yoga, vegetarian, mm-hmm, vegan restaurants in Berlin in the 1930s. It's all, yeah. So everything can be liberating or imprisoning, including, you know, all this stuff. Right. So, but again, you clued in, and so, do you wish them spells of what would be your wafting blessing? You know, may it be that all people, you know, no longer be snookered by their desire to not be snookered. May the spells dissolve. What do you come up with?
Boy, is that ever an important question. the best thing that I'm able to do personally is person by person by person being able to open their minds a bit, you know, and question everything, to not believe any particular narrative. Do your own research. Don't be snookered by any narrative. As far as undoing a spell, I basically have to turn it over to the primordial mother. I turn it over to that one woman. I ultimately have to trust that that element of it is taking place. That there is a that even just from the perspective of a survival or heartful a mammalian perspective, you know, that the Earth Mother really loves us and that it wants the best for us, and to remember that and to connect with that as best we can with our kin, with our friends. I've had to learn in these past months how to not waste as much time and energy on trying to convince people who are unconvincible, that have made up their minds.
But I think Venus and Gemini, you know, there is a great skill for all of us. The more we know and the more we compost our compensatory snark herumfitudinous, because people are surprised and therefore liberated by being asked questions like, did you know? Did you know there's a statue of Isis outside the archives in which he holds sheaves of wheat and a baby and is pouring the waters of life to wash away the stain of slaves having been sold there? No, I didn't know that. Where the Constitution now rests, you know, and to remind us of the national shame of torturing so many children and babies. That's harder with the Trump people. They've hardened their hearts in some mysterious way. May they open again. But I do want to just before we yes. we've got lots of time. Okay, I just want to bring in Emma Goldman for the fun of it. Talk about anarchists. You know, it's her birthday on June 27th. She's very humming. People's charts respond to transits even after they're dead. Mercury's going to station on her sun before it goes direct. But she also Venus-Uranus conjunction. And I read an article. I mean, I've loved her as a spirit auntie forever. such a great exemplar of her chart, her dedication, her assignment. But I loved reading the article in Teen Vogue today on Emma Goldman. Go Team Vogue. It was a good article, and I think Emma Goldman would be amused by that. But just the Cancerian Big Mama, you know, embodiment, there she was in the middle of the Russian Revolution, disagreeing with everybody because it wasn't anarchist interesting enough and was just tyranny, but serving soup to everyone, right? To all, here's a bowl of soup. Put down your weapons. Here's a bowl of soup. Very Cancerian, really great. And if I can't dance, I don't want to be in your revolution. So she's reporting in. She's reporting in with her strong, interesting, woofy self. And you know the everything going into the cauldron. What you said about your friends. No, there is no normal. There is no going back. But it is this huge revisioning opportunity, right? Nobody's going to go back to commuting 90 minutes, you know, and everything like maybe. Maybe a radio station doesn't need a building. I mean, it's wild thinking, right? Going everything into the cauldron. But the poignancy of the necessity for leadership, back to Saturn and vision, is we have so many important things that need doing, and so many people need work. Yeah, we should put that together again. It's the having outsourced leadership to tyrannical dingbats that is in.
Well, an example of that, looking at it from the other side of the coin. Here, because there's so many people out of work and so many, actually hundreds of thousands of overseas workers that have been trying to get back over here because they've lost their jobs in the other parts of the world, they've hired 130,000 contact tracers over here. And it's incredibly clear that it was never about the virus. So basically, that was put in conjunction with a new version of an anti-terrorism bill over here that they can just come into your home, take you out, and without charge, and they can blame it on anything with the contact tracing apps. You know, so I mean, that's happened. big time over here.
That is a spooky, that's right, that's a very nuancing thing. So Neptune is our metaphysical capacity to experimentally, without hubris or pretension or even causality, but to meet backstage as we're doing and to go, right, where would we like swooshing? Where would we like awakening? We're humbled, like by Trump voters, well, going, oh,
I
come
love,
on in.
I love mm-hmm. you bring up Emmett Goldman, because one of the things that I've noticed is that in the sort of Orwellian inversion, okay, they're making people now, if you ask 100 people, it might only be 3 or 4 that would know that anarchy does not mean chaos.
Oh.
that it's a view that would say that human beings can be free and intelligent enough to run their own affairs.
Right.
I mean, that's anarchy.
Yeah, nor does it mean trust fund kids in black masks, you know, throwing bricks through Starbucks. No, it's a deep, deep, deep thing, anarchos without a leader. It was, again, you know, huge chapters of my life. And, you know, Emma Goldman's autobiography, Nowhere at Home, very beautiful for a cancer to write, like Nelson Mandela and the Dalai Lama, cancers who were in exile, right, but who yearned for a home for everyone, as Emma Goldman did, you know, But she knew everybody. She really used those yodes. And again, it was like what just happened in Seattle, right? In I think it's 1919, there was the Seattle General Strike, moved by anarchist intelligent direction, in which they had a neighborhood, well, the whole city for a brief moment, just like now, the autonomous zone, in which everything was run for free and experiment. These things are in our memosphere, right? And it was the only kind of spiritual form of politics, because it was in keeping here's where we can talk to everybody. It's like conservatives say, what do you know about Edmund Burke? Oh, not much. But important, Edmund Burke says the more we cultivate Saturn inside, the fewer outer restrictions we need. The cultivation of what is it to be a good citizen? These are useful questions to discuss. And remember, Emma, back then in the 1920s and 30s in America, dangerous, but there were people gathering in small theaters in Rhode Island and Baltimore and Santa Rosa and everywhere to discuss smart forms of governance, you know, smart, informed, and may that return as well. So we're almost on our way out, but do you want to give a Mars woof or a blessing or a last thing or, you know?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's kind of to circle back to something you introduced when we first brought up about Mars and Aries. I think our task in revisioning the story and in coming up with a new narrative is to look at Mars, and this is challenging. I mean, it really is going to require our full-on imagination about how to do it, is to transform our understanding of Mars into the protector of the community, the people of our kin, and to try to think of a version of protectorship that's not like we're the good guys beating down the bad guys.
Exactly, and we're on our way out all too fast. Yeah. But redefining, let's write liberating Mars as protector. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Daniel DiMario in the Philippines.
Brilliant. Hey, thanks, Caroline. Nice anyway, there. Good report. Yeah, fine.
Absolutely, and thank you, Lucretia Burton, and CoyoteNetworkNews.com is where you can find the summer solstice address. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Lucretia. Yay.